Today is June 9th, 1984. My name is Tika Ward. I'm interviewing Freddie Dunnigan. We are at 1313 Morton Avenue, Louisville, Kentucky. Our topic is Lou Tate and the Little Loom House. As we begin, tell me just a little bit about yourself.
My name is Frederica Dunnigan. That's Maria Frederica, that nobody uses. And I was born in Germany, came here in 1950, and my husband died, unfortunately, in 1954 in an army accident. We were army people. And I decided to stay in this country. I had a little boy who was born in Fort Knox, and he's grown up now as an assistant district attorney. And I met Lou Tate a long time ago, when Philip was about 8 years old, and she has been quite a wonderful influence in both of our lives.
How did you meet her?
I had two friends, Hal and Kitty Tenney, and they lived, I had met them shortly after the death of my husband. They were very outgoing people, interested in everything, and at the time they sometimes attended an international club, and that was done through the YWCA, and I was president of it for 1 year. We kind of invited people who didn't have any place to go on Thanksgiving because they were here either on scholarships or as officers or as something, you know. And the Tennies gave a party once where way, way back, I would say 1956 or so, and there were some Spanish-speaking people and some others, and I was, through that international club, I had been added to that group. And I met the Tennies. I fell in love with them. They had a small girl, Ellen Tenney, who was about a year and a half older than my son, Philip. And this is, as I said, a long, long time ago, I think in 1956, so we're going on 30 years of friendship. And the Tennies, in turn, had met and heard of Lou Tate. And they, when I first met the Tennies, they lived on South First Street in a charming little house, but they had already met Lou Tate then. I had not. And they, a few years later, bought a very famous old log cabin on top of Kenwood Hill then. And it was about 120 years old, and it's a wonderful log cabin. And right below on Kenwood Hill, Lou Tate had three cabins, the bottom house, the wisteria cabin, and the top house. And since I was good friends with the Tennies, of course they were delighted with their new house, and they invited me over. And here I was, I think I saw Lou Tate the first time outside under these great big 100-year-old trees where she had set about 20 looms outside, and children were weaving, and there was excitement over the whole place, and, you know, under these old trees, and birds were singing, and my son Philip, who was always strutting around with two cowboy guns, toy guns on his side, you know, a very manly man and so forth, was about 8 or 9 at the time, and fell in love with this too, and asked whether he could weave. And Lou Tate was absolutely marvelous with children, and could also subdue them. I just recently spoke to Philip about Lou again, and he said, yes, she's been such an influence in my life because you had to have manners when you went there. She made you mind, and you had to have manners or you were not accepted. And so that's how we first came to meet Lou Tate. I was not a weaver, but I supported her projects as much as I could because they really interested me and were fascinating.
We have taken some pictures of some of the things that you bought.
Oh, you mean weaving samples? I always did, and I wish I had kept more of them. Lou, as everybody knows, I think had a famous history having woven damask napkins for President Hoover's wife, I was told, and Miss Eleanor Roosevelt came here to visit her, and there are older, former pictures of Lou where she, you know, was with these people. She did a lot, I think, for the University of Louisville and taught in teaching always and in drawing out children. And she had, yes, on many of her meetings or special Sundays that she had, she would exhibit weaving samples that the children had done either in, or even adults. She had large adult classes that were done in sort of simple weaving for children, or that were done by adults who were experts and had, you know, like in a tapestry class or in an experimental class. And sometimes there were wonderful little articles and gifts that people could send home. I'm always at a loss as to what to send to my people at Christmas time. And when you bought a very nicely woven towel, you could just stick it in an envelope and send it as a flat gift, and it was something very special from Kentucky. Lou specialized in her little labels where she would say that it was woven at the little Lou house in Louisville, Kentucky. And these gifts, so quite a few of my things that I bought from Lou Tate are no longer here. They're now in Europe. But I still have. I kept some, for instance, a set of tartans, little... they were. She said they were coasters to set under a glass or so, where she had done tremendous research on Scotland and the different families who had these in Ireland too. I think who had special tartans to their name, which came with their name. You know, and apparently were then woven into the old times into their kilts that they wore. And Lou made little samples. Of all these different colored things, and wrote the family names on them, and must have done a tremendous amount of research about the family and who owned which tartan and what plaid, I mean, you know, in what color. And I bought other things, you know, that I, as I said, that I gave away as gifts. I wish now I had bought one of those large, that she called serapes, you know, a large stole, which I never did. And I know Ellen Tenney has one. They are lovely. And, I mean, you could buy fine tablecloth and things like that. I had a number of wonderful placemats and table settings from her, which have all gone to people that I loved as gifts. So.
Please tell how she got the information on the tartans.
On the tartans, I think she, I'm quite sure that Lou Tate, all her life, did a lot of research in different ways. She wrote to people, I'm quite sure, and wrote to other countries also. I'll get into that later because she had strong connections with Canada. And she spent a great deal of time at the library. I believe, also when you came to Lou Tate's place, it was, there were corners parts of the room that were covered with books where you could tell that she had been working, doing studies all the time. And she went to the library. We sometimes laughed about it for another reason also, because she liked to, in her spare time, which she didn't have very much of, she liked to read a mystery story. So she was a steady guest at the library, I know that. And I'm sure she knew a lot of people at the university, and she was a person who did very disciplined, great research on the things before she came out and said, this is so-and-so, or this pattern belongs to such-and-such. She did a great deal of research on coverlets. She wrote several articles that are quite... There's a book that I have to try to still find in my house, which I loved, and I probably hid it in a place where it's hard to find because I loved it when I moved here. Where she had written a very enlightening article about weaving in and around Kentucky and Indiana too. And there is, you know, she was particularly interested in jacquards, which had the very fine double weaving, as far as I know. And as I said before, I'm not a weaver, but I got interested in the tremendous artwork that was done centuries ago in the weaving field. One day, I became so interested. Lou Tate had such an influence on people in her enthusiasm, whether they wove or not. You just were drawn to her, to this. And I became, I've always been somebody who liked to go to flea markets. One morning, years ago, I was still living in my other house on Kenwood Hill, where I was so close to Lou. I had gone to a flea market at the Kentucky Fair and Exposition Center on a Saturday. And it was one of those, not one of those refined ones, you know, where everything is terribly expensive and the only fine, you know, exquisite pieces. This was, everybody who had something could bring things. And there was a rather heavy-set woman there from Indiana who had coverlets, these old bed covers that are woven double, usually in a beige and a dark blue, and show marvelous designs on each side, can be used either with the more beige side up or with the side that shows more dark blue. And I found one on the floor, and I unfolded it, and I found that it didn't have too many holes, that it could actually be mended and used, and I was very excited about it. But at that time, it was $100 plus tax. This was years ago. I think it would be five times as much now. But this represented a lot of money for me, and I went home and didn't buy it. But I went on the next morning. I woke up Lou Tate and said, "Lou, I saw this on the phone, and I saw this tremendous coverlet, and I want to describe it to you. And these people are still at the fairgrounds today. I want to know whether you think I should buy it." And she said, "Tell me what it says in the corners. It has to say something in all the four corners." I said, "It does. It says W.C. Craig, and then W.V. And I said, "Does that mean it's from West Virginia?" And she said, "No, that means he's a weaver. You found a coverlet from one of the most famous weaving families." I said, "Well, then it says D.C., and it couldn't be Washington. And then it says I.A., and then it says the year 1856. She said, "Well, D.C. is Decatur County, and I.A. is Indiana, of course, and you found a coverlet from the famous Craig family that was woven in 1856. And Freddie, I would advise you to go out there and buy that." Well, I did, and I have enjoyed it ever since. It's a marvelous cover. I had a few of the little holes mended, but it is a conversation piece, and every time I do keep it on my bed, yes, in winter, because it's wool and it's warm, and adds to the comfort, and every time I look at it, it helps me again to think of Lou Tate and how marvelous she was. I also loaned her that piece a couple of times for exhibits that she held up in her cabins. Lou was a great one for parties. She loved to give exhibits, and at those times, as I said before, the little people bought samples and bought things, and this helped Lou, because Lou was so generous in her love towards the children who came there to be, that many of them who couldn't afford to buy the yarn or the things needed for the warp, she just gave it to them, you know. So Lou was always, you know, looking around for a little income, because she had always just, when she had made some, she had already given it away again to somebody's benefit. And she did give, especially in summer, under those big old trees, she gave wonderful get-togethers, where people either wove or showed their weaving experiences, and she would then exhibit some of the lovely pieces that she herself owned from different countries, and some, as I said, coverlets and wonderfully woven pieces. And I remember the one that I owned, I had up there at the Top House for exhibit several times, and we enjoyed it together. And Lou was, she also, for her close friends, she gave little parties in winter, maybe when it got depressing and dark, and she would say, there was one thing she could cook very well, and she was, you know, I don't think she was too fancy a cook, but this was her famous chili. And she would say, "We're having a chili party," and you would come into the bottom cabin, which was a charming place in a way, but it was a big fieldstone fireplace, but it was so full of looms that you had to kind of wind your way through, and she would have one long table then and use the seats for the little wooden seats for the looms for the guests to sit on. And she had some very fine English spode china, and she had Limoges china and things from her parents that meant a lot to her, and she would put all that out, and then in the midst of it would sit a great big pot of chili, and those little shell crackers around, and we would all have a marvelous time. Especially she did try to do this around Christmas time, when, you know, and I remember that she was always very happy to, her big fieldstone fireplaces had these ledges where you could set some pretty things, and Lou had liked very much different little angels. So each time I went to Germany, my native little mountain towns and where my sisters lived, and so what I brought back, a little carved angel or a little, angel from another country. I guess I should have said in the beginning that I am a travel agent. I have worked for American Express for 25 years, and I have seen many other countries. And Lou, I brought her back some weaving from Ecuador once, where she was really excited because she could identify so well with other countries and their arts and crafts. And I don't know, I guess my memories tumble, together here a little bit. I haven't written all this down. I probably should have. But as I said, Lou has had an influence on many people that will never die, and children too. I really liked her.
You must have some special memories.
Of Lou Tate, yes, I do, many. And one is the last Christmas before Lou's death, the Christmas of 1978 to 79. She spent Christmas Eve at my house for Christmas dinner, and she had done that many times. But this last time was one of the most wonderful occasions I can remember. Lou had already had a few bouts with trouble in her colon and had had a few hospital stays, where apparently she knew that she had a disease that would finally be terminal, but she chose to, as much as she could, ignore it. And she had been there for many times in my house anyway, and also for some other Christmases, but this last one I was a little scared because she had already been to the hospital and was reportedly having a little stomach trouble, and or more or less quite a bit, but she didn't show it. But anyway, the friends I earlier mentioned, Hal and Kitty Tenney, we had sort of figured out a tradition where on Christmas Eve I would always cook a typically German meal, which is called Rouladen. And they are beef Rouladen, and there you have very, very fine, thin beef, and you beat it until it's really, really thin, and then you put a slice of bacon inside and some hard-boiled eggs, just little bitty pieces, and pickles, and all kind of things to make it nice. And you roll it up, and you roll a little string around it, and you brown them on both sides, and then they create, their own juice, and then until they're ready, they are just leading their life in the frying pan, I guess. And with that, I sometimes serve German potato balls, or a special kind of noodles that are called Spätzle noodles, and sometimes red cabbage or sauerkraut or what have you. And I had made a great big meal of this kind. And Lou came looking very festive. She had, and I should have talked about that earlier too, in a few years before, 2 years perhaps, she had been to Canada and had given lectures. She had been invited to Canada and Nova Scotia, actually, and spent a month there with giving lectures and gaining all kind of new information about weaving and about their arts and crafts. And she, from that particular Canadian trip, she had brought back a red jacket, if I remember. It must have been from that trip. That looked very festive, very Christmassy. It was by no means only red. It was had yellow and brown and stripes. Now, not necessarily woven into it. They were interlaced stripes of material that different materials that made it look like a little bit like a tapestry, and it looked very festive. Anyway, she arrived. I was still cooking, and the Tennies were coming. My son Philip was coming, and with his former wife Karen, they were going to participate. When I jumped from one subject to the other, Philip's former wife Karen is a lovely young lady who now lives in California, and I think very highly of her. And she also took weaving lessons from Lou Tate for one whole summer after my son and Karen first got married, and she didn't have a job yet. And she loved Lou Tate also, and bought a little loom and became quite an expert weaver. Anyway, all these people were coming. Oh, no. Okay, we were interrupted by the telephone, but I do want to tell about this special Christmas Eve. Lou arrived early, and she had brought a little game. I wish I still had it. I think I have hidden it somewhere. It was ropes that you twist and do things in red, white, and green colors, and you twist them around your hands, and you make little designs with them. You know, she gave one of those little games to each of us, and Philip says he still remembers that quite a bit. In fact, you can make your own little braids. He said he made one that night, and he was a grown man then, and wore it for the church service afterwards at midnight. And she was sitting there doing this while I did all this cooking. And I'm not that great a cook, and I don't have company that often, so that I get a little bit flustered that everything's hot at the same time. But anyway, this turned out to be a perfect meal. And I will never forget. I know that Lou had already trouble with her stomach then, but she must have had a particularly good day because she enjoyed it so much. She ate several of these beef rouladen and the German potato balls and the cabbage that I had, and we drank champagne, and we had one of the most wonderful evenings that I can ever remember. And the next day, as our tradition was, the Tennys and Lou and close friends would come over to my house on Christmas Eve on the 24th of December, and then on the 25th, Kitty Tenny would cook a big Christmas dinner, usually a turkey. And so the next day, we were all at the Tennys, and Lou was there again, feeling wonderful and being absolutely the star of the party, talking to many people. Again, she had her that beautiful red and colorful jacket on. And at this time, since I didn't have to cook, I had brought my camera and took quite a few photographs. And they turned out quite well. The nicest one being one of Lou, where she looks deep in conversation with Kitty Tenny. And later on, when Lou was so became so ill in the hospital, we often had nice little chats, and she said, "That picture, Freddie, I really like, and I want you to make about 25 of those and give them to my friends after I'm dead. And I really like that, and I hope Kitty is not offended, but we'll have to cut Kitty out of this picture. It's supposed to be a portrait of myself." And I can say this right here in this interview, I've been very much amiss in carrying out this task that Lou had given me. She will be dead 5 years in June this month, and but I will say for my apology that I had a tough time getting this done. I work a pretty long office day, and I don't have too much time for lunch, and I first went to Walgreens, which they do excellent photos otherwise, but when I said I wanted this one lady cut off of the picture and only half of the negative, they said they couldn't do it. And then, again, some time passed until I had time in my lunch hour to go to one of the more famous photographers. There was at that time, I think, Schumann's Click Clinic and some others. You know, they were very friendly, but they said to cut a negative apart, they didn't have the facilities, which surprised me because in Europe, you can have that done without any problem. You can cut the negative to the size you want and give it to the developer. But I had a very good friend, Bob Couprion, who is a very well-known photographer, who knew Lou also. And I think 2 years later, Bob travels a lot. He does racetrack photography and all that, and does portraits and festivities all over the country. But I finally got a hold of him, and I had him do these pictures of Lou Tate. I have them now, and I will send them to the people who were close to her. The next step was to find a little frame that would go around those, to not just send the picture without a little a frame that it was in. And so I had a hard time finding those. And some people use it for Christmas cards where the photo looks out, but they all did look too jolly and said, you know, wishing you happy holidays, so I didn't use those. And finally, again, Bob Cooper came to my rescue and brought me about 25 of these little frames in which I'm sending Lou Tate's picture on now. But she was very adamant about that. This was to be the one, and as much as she loved Kitty, this was going to be her portrait. We have one that we can show together with this interview. Since I'm talking about the time when Lou got ill, I should tell you that she was several times in the hospital, and I think in the end she knew that they were not going to operate you know, anymore or do anything else that she, but each time she went back to her beloved cabin and stayed there and just went around her daily life and acted as if this sickness as this was something that she could overcome if she didn't talk about it. After each hospital stay, Lou had to, in order to recover, be in the nursing home, And I do not remember the name of that particular home, but the Tennies know where it is. But she was in the same nursing home several times. And she told me about the first experience. She said, well, you know, that really got on my nerves. There were people, you know, in the beds next to me, they would say, please, God, maybe let me die tonight. You know, let me deliver me, let me die tonight. In the other bed, they would say, please, God, let me live. And I just thought that was so terrible that I decided to teach everybody to weep. And sure enough, she got the small cardboard looms that she originally used to teach children. And she ordered these for the nursing home, and her yarns and her you know, this is a primitive way of weaving, but I do know that much, that you have a little cardboard loom and you have it strung with a little warp from both sides, and you have a tiny shuttle and you try to weave little potholders, you know, the size of a potholder or so. She taught everybody in that nursing home to weave. And the next time, then she became better and went back to her cabin. The next time she went into that nursing home, they could hardly wait for her to come. The people had cried when she left, and now they wanted her to come. This time, she asked Solly Moss to put on a spinning bee in that nursing home and all these kind of things. And she was really a great blessing, I think, to these people. Also, show them that life was not necessarily absolutely over with, that there were creative and nice things that could be done. And that was the type of person Lou Tate was. She always showed, you know, in anything she did, she showed creativity. I have to tell another little thing that was so endearing to me, and that was that when I first met Lou Tate, she always said, we do this and we do that and we do it this way. And at first I thought maybe there's a husband around somewhere or a sister or a relative. No, Lou was used to saying we because she included her dog Skipper in her family life. And it was really, I finally, you know, rather shyly asked the Tennies one time when she says we, whom is she talking about? And Kitty said, oh, Skipper, of course, you know. And Skipper was a very loving, very nice dog who was her longtime friend. And when Skipper finally died, my son Philip buried him for her. And that is a big memory in Philip's life. And Lou never got another dog. Skipper was it. That was it. However, the Tennies always had large dogs, and they had one of their very, very, very nice dogs whom I remember was Bambi, a Rhodesian Ridgeback, a dog that is used to hunting and running, which he did, or she rather, up there in the woods. And when the Tennies were gone, that dog went down to Lou Tate and went to, you know, the dog was rather spoiled but also very much loved, and crawled into bed with her. And then, you know, the Tennies had to come back and look for their dog. And then Lou Tate would say, oh, Bambi's down here. She's sleeping down here with me, you know. And I will never forget a person. You cannot forget a person with that much presence. I had said in the beginning that she taught children to weave on these looms, either in the cabins or outside under the big trees. And she was commanding. She was always friendly, but there were some rather roughneck boys from time to time. One time I ran into one. Lou always had her cabin doors open and had beautiful artwork hanging from the doors and from nails in the wood and so forth. And at that time she had quite a few belts. Philip wove an Indian bell too one time, you know, that was very nice and an intricate woven bell. One of these boys said to me, I thought this was an Indian trading post. Is that lady an Indian trading lady? I said, no, she's a weaver. And he said, what's that? And I think she was so good in her way with children, not domineering but commanding respect, that she even got the rougher ones to sit down at a loom and try their luck. And personal memories, you asked me. Yes, one day in the later years, I think it was in 1977, when Lou, 2 years before her death, when she knew she might not be, you know, around forever, she wanted to her friends to have some special things that were dear to her. And she parted with things that she had used in life and that had given her joy. And I have one friend, a close friend, whom I also like very well. She always used to say, give while your hand is warm. And I think that is, you know, the type of thing that Lou had in mind. She wanted her close friends to have mementos while she was still there. So one day when I was... I just had embarked on a great big project and sorting out all my papers and had my whole living room floor on Orchard Hill Drive covered with papers. She came to the door. I didn't know she was coming, and the place looked really kind of messy. And she carried this beautiful decanter, glass decanter, which is encased in some silver, I don't even know what to call that, silver artwork around it. And as I was saying, Lou appeared at my door, and she had this beautiful decanter in her hand, which is a lovely glass decanter with a, it is set in a silver filigree, I guess you could call it. I don't know, and it is apparently a wine decanter. And with this, she had this, inside of it, she had a letter that was sticking out of the little decanter, and she said, you can read it later, and we talked and chatted, and she wanted me to have this. And when I read the letter, it said, July 6, 1977. Dear Freddie, when I think of you, I just think of you as making your friends at home more than a good hostess. Then I think of Freddie and her violin, the Freddie that gives her friends gifts which delight them, as the angel playing violin, or the Aztec Inca pot, or the little Bavarian red witch, to perfect the little loom house, to protect the little loom house from bad witches. Thus, so many treasured memories for over 20 years. This old decanter is for the Freddy, the welcome of a friend. It came from Uncle John, my great uncle, who died about 1912. As is an old custom, when parents died, their eldest son had charge of the household. This was one which was so numerous as to be always always having a little opulence, I think it says. This is a decanter used to pour a wee bit of sherry from when his brother brought this granddaughter by just for the pleasure of being able to share. I believe she's talking about Lou Tate herself when she was born, when the decanter was used to have a wee bit of sherry, as she says. And then she just says, as usually, the page is not long enough to carry my love, Lou Tate. And I treasure this letter. I have others from her that are absolutely beautiful. One, also in the year of 1977, where she is talking about a lunch that we should have downtown, she and Kitty Tenney and myself, because this was when Lou was going to Nova Scotia to take her experience and her art to others who had invited her. And she stayed, I believe, longer even than she had had planned, and was just a really wonderful experience, I think, for her. And she was very, very full of ideas when she came back. from this trip. She also, among other things, brought me, if I remember correctly, from this trip, some old German weaving drafts on paper, which were written in script, and I translated a few for her, but my own script reading was not that good that I could really tell her, but it talked about what colors to use, what these old certain weaving patterns had been. And after that trip, she also put an exhibition on again, as she loved to do, under her big trees on the hill. And it did say that she said that she had, in Cape Breton and some other places, really seen marvelous weaving patterns. And it was a wonderful afternoon in which I learned more about Nova Scotia, where I have never been. I remember Bob Douglas giving some very good descriptions and things also. Here's another letter that I see here, but it's not the one about Canada, but the one about Canada, she was just writing that we should have lunch together, and I was then giving her her air ticket. Here's one that says, it is earlier, I believe, because this was when, this must have been in 1975, it's not dated, but that's when my young daughter-in-law took weaving lessons there. She says here, "Dear Dunnigans, hope you can all come over this Sunday and stay for potluck supper. Kieran, if you want to start weaving, come by 2 o'clock and I'll get you started. They will having a program after 3. You will enjoy that we can weave too by getting started early. Tuition is $54.50, $12.50 due through March 1956. This was when you were a member of the Kentucky Weavers, which I always was, you know. $42 for 10 lessons. I don't think you could get these for that today. Then if you have time to take a day regularly to be hostess, you can come any afternoon for more weaving. Most of your materials are additional. Think we'll have fun weaving this summer. Right now I'm back on everything, as we are just beginning to coordinate. No mailing done this time, as Kentucky Weavers did not get the stuff ready in time yet. Mickey Lawson is going to talk about color. Think you all know her. She's painting some coverlets, pointing some coverlets now. Think it is such a good bicentennial idea. Oh, it must have been for 76 then. Bob Douglas is going to tell about his Nova Scotia trip. Two of our members in the area are doing things on the project there. This was before Lou went. She went in 77. Freddie, as one of the programs, we want you to get all the people who used to be part of the Hill. I would like to make something special of the tennies. So be making a list on 3x5 cards, please, so it will be easy to check by other lists. Would like to call this part Midsummer Art Fair. Thinking about asking if we can have paintings on Possum Pass. What do you think? Don't hint to Kitty and Hal. See, the Tennies lived on what was called Possum Pass, and rightfully so, because I many times saw a possum lift up the garbage can and try to get into there. And Lou Tate lived on Coon Trail. That's where her cabins were. You know, that was the official name of that trail. So she wanted to have Midsummer Art Fair on Possum Pass. Then she says, she's talking about another dear friend, Ann Kuiper, and she says, "I know Mrs. Palmer's death is hard on Ann. She was such a mother to us all. I remember the first time she came to a coverlet show and said her daughter and I just had to get together. But I think it would be fun to have a surprise, or almost a surprise, for Kitty and Hal." And now I think I will just tell you that in the very end, I was one of the few last people to see Lou Tate at the hospital. I had made several visits, and we had always chatted, and I was always afraid I would tire her out, but she said, "No, don't you go away." She's very commanding about that. And each time I came and brought, you know, a half a dozen of newspaper back books, because she definitely liked her stories, and I picked up everything I could have to bring there to read. And as kind as Sophie, as Lou always was, a couple of times she complained about the nurse. She said, "You think that, since I can't reach out with my arms that much," she had some tubes and so forth attached to her, you know, "that they would be put these books at easy distance. But no, they have to be over there on the windowsill, you know." So then he would come and place them all around her. But that was one of the few times I heard her complain. She loved her doctor, and she trusted him, and she was grateful to him. And on one of those occasions, Kitty Tenney and I both went to see her, and she said, "Well, Freddie, I'll tell you something. I think she already knew that I wanted to buy an older home. The Tennies had moved into the Highland part of Louisville, and that I was looking there also. And she could understand that. She knew she wouldn't be there much longer, and she was one of the strong drawing points for me to live on Kenwood Hill. And she said, I tell you one thing. I have this beautiful Oriental rug, and I'm going to leave it to you. Kitty, she said, and she looked over at Kitty, I'm really sorry, but I can't leave it to you because you have two cats and a dog, and it belonged to my parents, and I really shouldn't, it should be kept nice. I personally had never seen the rug because she had it covered in the vislooms in the bottom cabin. You know, it was there on the floor, but you couldn't see it because looms were sitting all over it. And Kitty was in her wonderful warm voice, said, well, that's all right, you know, I don't want your rug ruined. She said, no, I really have to leave that to Freddie. And she said, but I'll leave you something else. And I think Ellen needs a loom stand. Ellen was her daughter who did some, Tenny's daughter is their daughter who does some wonderful weaving herself. So after Lou's death, she had put little pieces of paper on all these pieces on the rug that I should have it, and on a loom stand that the Tennies should have it, so that her lawyer, who was a Mr. Fowler at the time, some lovely people, I talked to them too, and I got some letters from the law firm after Lou's death, but they were they had no trouble identifying that she had thought all this out in her loving way, and I did get this marvelous rug, which I gave to a rug cleaner and restorer, because obviously with you know, the loom sitting over it, it had you know, absorbed quite a bit of lint and things like that, and it is now in my front room, and every time I see it, I think about Lou Tate, always. She was really something else, and I was one of the last few people to see her alive. I think she died a day or so later, and on that occasion I went with Hal Tenney. Kitty was in Florida and visiting her family there. And I felt I was tiring her out, and she pulled me back on the bed and said, sit down here, young lady, and I want to talk to you. And we talked for about 2 hours, and that is one of the most very strong memories I have of Lou also. But a person like Lou Tate, I guess you can use that phrase, it's one in a million, and she will just leave a lot of people with heritage that will go on and on and on through her loom house. I think in other of these interviews it has probably been said that there is a foundation for the little loom house, and I can only urge anyone to take interest in it, to come visit it. We have a small membership donation that we make, and I think it's wonderful to keep her memory alive this way.